We need a good Florida story, okay? And I was thinking about this as I'm drinking my coffee because yesterday I wanted to go up and see an old friend, Ed Milet. He's struggling with cancer, and I've been wanting to see him for a while. We had a little bit of a falling out a while back that, was unfortunate. We're both going through a lot at the time and disagreed on a subject. And it really bothered me because I knew he was right after that I found out that he had cancer. And I thought, oh man, I wanted to go up and see him because of all the people that meant a lot to my dad, it was Ed. And Ed will tell me the story. And it brings tears to my eyes, saying how my father was a true father figure in his life, and how he learned what it meant to be a man, or I should say human being, but a man, around my father. I was just up there yesterday seeing him. Went up to Erie, went up on a beach pretty much alone, and nobody was out. And it was a beautiful day for October. And I sat there for a while and I was waiting for him to get back to me. Signal was sparse up there, so trying to get that. And I ordered a pizza. We wanted to take it over. And I had a couple plants I wanted to give to him because I knew that he's new has a new place he just got, and I wanted to give him a gift. And it was really nice. It was really nice. I got to see him and we talked about things and we talked about how people are treated today in this day and age, and just how him going through cancer, how alone he feels. And he didn't know my father was sick, or I tell you what, he would have been the first one there. And I wish when we were going through with my father that I could have notified all these people that my father was going through this because there were so many people my father knew, and I was just, you don't want to keep calling people up and telling them about it. And he said, when he found out that my father had passed away, he was like taken aback because people said it nonchalantly, and he just broke down crying. That's how much my father meant to people. Ed is a Millette. His father was a good friend of my father's. And to give you a little backstory here about the Millettes. I went up to Erie a lot with Tex, my older brother. But my dad has he's had these friends, the Millettes, and when he was a district supervisor for household finance and GE Credit, he had this amazing ability. He could deal with really rich people and deal with, the job part of it. But then he could deal with anybody. My only father always taught me you don't look down on anybody. And he would talk to the people that, as Ed said the story the other day, exactly what life matters in these times and why my father taught these types of things. Ed said, he had a rough time and he really needed money, and he was going to see say how hey, I haven't eaten in 2 days, times are tough. He has all these things he's dealing with, and he thought, God, if you would just give me enough money to buy groceries. He said, I really don't want to panhandle or ask other people for money. And someone gave him $100. And he went and bought his groceries and he was like, wow, I have $25 left. What am I going to do with it? And he was walking back with his groceries and he saw a family, a mother and her kids, and they were standing there. And she said, you could tell the woman was down on her luck. And she was asking people for money. And he said, gee, that's one of the toughest things to have to do in this world is to be poor or homeless or whatever and have to ask for help. You're going through rough times. And he said, I've had times, he has had times where he's had a lot of good luck, and a lot of times where he had a lot of bad luck. And he said, looked at this woman and she says, "I just need $25." And he said, "Wow, I was going to be doing what you're doing right now. But God gave me this and I'm told to give this to you." That's how my father's philosophy always was too. And these are the type of men that I grew up around. Ed's always been like a brother to me. And I don't mean to mention his name publicly because he's a private person, but I see his struggles. And to go up and just be around him for a few hours and talk about the old times and get up in that area where we used to have so much fun. Wow, it brought back memories. Driving through Northeast, which is the New York side of Erie, and all these grapevines and the coastline and these amazing cliffs. It's just so much of my childhood. Wow. We went up there almost every summer, and my dad had this friend, which is Ed's dad, that he'd met in a bar one day. This guy said, "Hey, I don't know where I'm at." He's pretty drunk. He said, "I don't know where I'm at. I don't know how I'm gonna get home." So my dad says, "Well, we'll find you. We'll find your home. Don't worry about it. We'll get you there." And he got to know these people, and man, they were like his best friends. Like Bill was somebody my dad, he put a lot of stock in. A few people on this planet, Bill and his brother Dick Millett, Richard, that you can put stock into like that. I know they always had camp. It was always a wild time. I knew this whole group of people. Many of them are gone now, okay? And so to go up there, it takes me down memory lane. And getting off the subject of Bill, I'm going to get on to the subject of his brother, Richard, Dick Millett. How to describe Dick Millett? Dick Millett was like this, a little guy. Always smoked these cigars, this George Burns just type of delivery. He could get away with anything. He could go up to a girl and say some things that you probably shouldn't, and she'd buy him a beer. He had charisma. And his wife, Edna, she was great. When I was a kid, they bought me a rabbit. I was up there and they bought me this white albino rabbit. He says, "Hey," big cigar in his mouth. "Bought you something, kid. Here you go. Got you a rabbit." And I was like, "Wow." Well, I was a little kid. I'm like, "Thank you. It's meant the world to me." And his daughter, his son-in-law, John Ripley, had a son, Donnie, that was a friend of mine, my age. And we used to always play together up there. And Donnie got killed. He got hit by a car. And it really just, I think that was the first person, the first experience I ever had saying, "Wow, this friend of mine is not here anymore." It was little Donnie. And so the whole time I was around him, I always in past many years thought of Donnie and everything. And as one and one of these people start dying off, you just start to realize how special these stories are in these times. So I'm gonna tell the story because it's something I've written down, I've talked about, talked to friends about, but it's not something that's me talking about in a podcast. And it's fun. It's fun, it's silly, it's life, it's an adventure, and it involves these people. These are people that would sit there and drink three cases of beer at a time. They were French Canadian. And Dick had that charisma. He had that charisma. And he lived in Florida. Well, the rest of them lived up north here. They lived in Florida, and John lived down there. And for many, many years, they're like, "Oh, you have to come down and see us. You have to come down and see us." So it so happened that Dick's wife had passed away, and they were going down that way in the wintertime. Bill, his brother, was going down. I need this big pickup truck. So I said, "Okay, I was like, man, this is 24-hour drive, you know? And I was talking myself into whether I wanted to go down with my dad and them or not. And then I thought, well, you know, I want to be there for my dad because these people can be a little wild at times, and I might need to be the voice of reason in all of this. Should be the other way around, but I need to be the voice of reason. And I was in college. I was in like my mid-20s, and we're going down to Florida to get some sand in our shoes. That's what I thought. I never actually saw the beach the whole time I was there. That's the sad part. I wanted to, and it was near Orlando, and all these circumstances happened that I didn't get to. So I was not happy about some things, okay? But that being one of them. But it was my Florida experience. And if I ever get to go down again, I'd like to actually see the beach, okay? Because though I live near the coast, my experiences with the ocean or any kind of beach are eerie. New Jersey, I went to one time, and I went to Virginia Beach when my sister moved. So I really haven't had a lot of saltwater experience, and I was looking forward to the Gulf and all these thoughts of, oh, Florida, Ernest Hemingway, you know, old man in the sea. But we drive down and we get everything ready, and I talk myself into going. And in the meantime, I had this really great friend, Victoria. It was kind of like, always been one of the most important people in my life. Like, for I had a whole group of friends at the time, and it always wound up being me and Victoria late at night talking until like 4 in the morning. And the birds are chirping, and we're both going, oh shit, this is the wrong side of daylight. And trying to like convince everybody we didn't do this, stay up real late and talk. And I always admired her so much, her friendship and everything. And she helped talk me into it. She's like, look, you need to go down, spend some time with your dad. This is going to be fun. This is going to be great. And I'm like, oh, okay, Vicky, you talked me into it. So, whole time down, she's texting me, and the whole time there, are you having fun? Is this great? This is wonderful. You're in Florida. Man, I wish I could be there with you, you know? And I just had this like smile frozen on my face, you know? Like, what did I get myself into? So I go down, and we drive down there, and we get to, John lived on the other side of town near Orlando, and, Dick lived in the other on the middle side. And there's this huge lake with all these beautiful flamingos and different birds, and it's the other side of the lake, which is like 10 miles away. You can see it the whole time. There's a hospital. It was the first time I saw that hospital. So I'm there, and then we see John, and we're stuck over at Dick's. So at first we're going back and forth. I'm sleeping over at John's place, and his other son had been, I think he was in military school, Donnie's brother, Donnie's little brother. And that kind of made me think about Donnie again. Like, I was getting back to him because I really want to think about Donnie, because I always think, like, the whole time I was there, I was kind of doing stuff, helping John out, because my old friend Donnie couldn't be there, you know. And it still touches me so much to this day. And John's now passed away, so a lot of these people aren't here. I wish I could call John up. He'd tell the story better than I could. But I'm around these two famous drinkers, partiers, Bill and Dick, and my dad. And they're going back to like in the 1960s, 1970s, the stories of when they were young men and they partied and they. Oh, they camped, they went hunting. It's the American story that everybody has, looking at deer antlers on the wall or looking through a photo book where everybody's in their plaid red wool rich outfit at camp, and they're telling stories like how Dick had this old school bus he made into a camp. And it was a pretty interesting time, I imagine, but it always involved getting very drunk. Lot of these stories, a lot of them I can't talk about on the air, but I was down there, and I'm the first night I'm there, and Dick has a place. There's a little culvert that runs through on the edge of his property and a wall, and he's an orange tree. And he's, hey, Pete, he says to my dad, I want to give you this, I want to give you that. And he's giving my dad these tackle boxes he has. He's, oh, man, he says, big cigar in his mouth and a beer. The guy never ate. He drank the time he woke up, the time he went to bed. 80 years old, healthy as a mule. Don't know how he did it. He did it. I want to give you this. And he's like, and my dad says, Dick, I don't want to take your fishing stuff. Oh, no, I'm not going to go fishing anymore. I'm getting too damn old. I'm telling you, getting too damn old. So he's going through his shed, and he's stuff flying this way, stuff's flying that way. Oh, there it is. Hey, this is good lore. This lore right here, I mean, that's the kind of thing. Big cigar in his mouth, and I just started laughing. He says to me, Willie, you like oranges? Hey, there's an orange tree right here, and you want oranges? He says, there's a grapefruit tree over there too. So I got to get the grapefruit, and I didn't know it was in his neighbor's yard. And these people come out, and they're looking at me, and I'm like, he told me I could have them, and they just started laughing because they knew Pops, called him Pops. And oh, yeah, Pops, okay. And I'm thinking, wow, this is the stuff I heard stories about as a kid, and I'm actually living it. And I think I had $300 in my pocket. But I figured I can get through the week with this. We're down there a week, and I went. Walked down the street like a block, and there was a place. This guy from some other country, I don't know what his name was, that's where Dick would buy his beer. So I bought him a case of beer, and I said, well, you know what? I'll drink a beer with you. We sat there, and we're talking about old times. We're talking about his wife, Edna, that just died. We're talking about all these old stories. I'm sitting there still feeling like a little kid because even though I'm in my 20s. I'm taking this all in, and I'm just, this is the stuff of novels, okay? And I'm not just getting my dad's side of the story. I'm getting other sides too. So some of the things my dad told me, he sugarcoated and didn't totally tell me how it perfectly went. Some of the wild things these people would do, he always kept a level head, but I'm like, wow, it was crazier than you actually told me. And fun though, like, Dick, the one time went in a bar, got drunk, took out a cigar, lit it up, said, set up them shot glasses. He started dancing to like this honky tonk song, dancing with his cowboy boots on around every shot glass, just like doing the Hank Williams, And it was a great story. And then there was a story where my dad one time, he pulled this joke on Dick. Up towards Butler, driving up north. This is a good one. He said, my dad had to wear a suit that day, and he didn't have a change because he was going to go and visit them. He said, I have to drive all this way in my suit. And he loved wearing his suits. My dad always had his tie perfect. He was a very handsome man. And he said, what the hell? He goes in the bar, and they go, they're looking at him because people dressed like that normally do not go in this bar. He said, I'm Richard's friend. I'm his attorney. And they said, attorney? Oh, yes, Mr. Millett just hit the lottery for $10 million. He would like to buy you all around. I'm his representative. And he drank a beer, bought everybody around, and he left. And he did this at about five of the bars on the way up. That's a joke. He knew Dick's routine, so. Dick goes in a cigar, and he's sitting there, and everybody's, hey, Dick, you're my best friend. Their arm on his shoulder. They're talking of old times. And Dick's just like sitting there, like the cigar, like chewing on it, like, what the hell's going on? And, so finally at one of the bars, my dad, they finally said about it, and he says, who? So my dad told him what he did, and Dick goes, you son of a bitch, everybody thinks I have money now. It's a great story. So I was hearing all these stories of a really great time with group of men that were men that I had a lot of fun with and enjoyed being around. And it made me laugh. It made me feel good. And it was the winter time when we were in Florida, so it was warm. I learned a lot that week. I learned what palmetto bugs were. When I was over at John's, I was watching television at night in his camper. And I thought, no, there can't be a bug that big on my leg. And I looked and I screamed like a little 12-year-old girl and threw a college textbook at it. And a bug threw the textbook back at me and gave me the finger and walked away. I swear to God. They're awful. I learned that Dick can party a lot more than I can. After the third or fourth day, he had different friends coming over. These were people that were awesome people. There was a, I forget what tribe she was, Seminole. And she looks at me and she goes, "Oh, you've got blood in you, my brother." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay, I'm part, Lenape." And she says, I've been making this necklace. I don't know who for. I want to give it to you. It was made for you. I'm supposed to give this to you." So she goes to her car and she gives me this necklace. It's red, black, with an eagle on it. And she says, "These colors, I was just told to make this for you." And I said, "Well, I don't have anything to give you." And she said, "That's okay." And I said, "Those are my tribal colors." And she's like, "Wow." And I learned from her a lot of the things, the natural plants. I learned about why there were these little guppies in the streams to keep the mosquitoes down. And another woman was a great cook. And Dick had all these people. And he'd rotate through going through these bars. He had a little bicycle with a Cadillac mirror taped on it. And he said, "That's my Cadillac." It was funny, man. So he went down to this bar, Isle of Capri, and he's sitting there. We actually got him to eat something. We're like, "Dick, we're gonna get you to eat something." And dropped his hearing aid on the floor and stepped on it. So he had one hearing aid. And then he started. He was fun. It was the last go round with these men. Last go round. And I couldn't party that much. So my dad and I decided we're going to let Bill and Dick do what they want to do. We want to spend some time with John. And we got a ride over to John's. We said, "Hey, we'll be over here." And Dick was cool with that. He was great. So we went over to his daughter's and John Ripley's. John Ripley had survived what did eventually kill my father, pancreatic cancer. He had lung cancer. So John couldn't drink because he had most of his pancreas removed. And he also had these plastic veins in his body. And he didn't get around too well. But John was a great Christian, great father, Donnie's dad. And getting messages here. And he was a lot of fun to be around. So we went over and we spent some time with John at his place, and it was wonderful. Got to see another side of the old friends I haven't seen in a while. I got to hear some of John's stories. I got to reminisce, and like I said, John didn't get around too well, so he went out of his way to make sure we had a good time. He took us to these big flea markets. And I went down and I bought this big hermit crab. It was like the size of my hand. I was like, "Wow, this thing's cool." And when I picked it up, it pinched right through my finger, like right through my fingernail and finger. I mean, I had this wound that was like unbelievable. And they were like, "Oh yeah, don't do that." But we went down and John wanted, because we'd gone out in the morning, he said, "Where can we go out and get something to eat?" I said, "Well, I always go to Denny's." And that was my thing. I'd go to Denny's and a bunch of friends up there. He said, "Okay." So we went there and he said, that really made me want strawberry shortcake. So we're going to go to the flea market And his flea market was like miles and miles and miles. I mean, you could buy everything you wanted there. You could live very frugally and cheaply off of what you could buy there. And we got strawberries freshly picked. And we made strawberry shortcake. We made a bunch of other things. We got back. And it was great. But the thing I didn't realize was John was walking all this way. And, we went to like this, we went to another store. I think it was like I found a Buddha statue. And, but John had a hard time walking to the end of his driveway. So he's been walking about 3 miles with us, pushing himself way too much. And I forget how it happened, but I know that I don't think we were there. I think we just happened to be with Bill somewhere. And John, one of those plastic veins in his body broke. So they're sitting there and he starts bleeding everywhere. And they had to get him, rush him to the hospital at this hospital, the other side of this big lake. And he was okay. Okay, they got to him in time. That was John. John was lucky. John was a fighter. John survived a lot. So he's like, oh man. He's like, I'm sorry, guys. He's like, you're one time being down here and this happens to me. He said, I wanted you to have a good time. And I said, John, we're having a good time. We are. We're here with you. And we're going to spend another week. We're going to spend a week and we're going to watch over your house for you, whatnot. So that was when I began my first book. And Vicky had texted me and she's like, you having a good time? And I'm like, yeah. Did you see the beach? No. And she was like, wow, you think you'd see the beach by now? I was telling the whole story, and I'm like, the God put me here right now to be here for this old friend, and I'm very blessed and grateful I can be, and I'm going to make the most out of it. And I did that. I started writing my first. I'd written poetry before, but if I start writing my first book, which became Laurel Highlands Poet, with a cover from up in Erie, for that reason, just thinking of these people. And a lot of those poems were just me sitting in the sun with my notebook in this environment with these banana trees and lizards running around, because that's not my environment. My first thing when I got to Florida, because you hit when you're driving, all of a sudden there's palm trees, and it's like you're going down the interstate, and all of a sudden it's like God says, okay, after this bridge, palm trees are going to grow. And they do. It's just like this, there's always that first palm tree. So we got to a rest stop, and I'm looking at this huge, massive palm tree and these huge orange groves. And I'm just like out of my element, okay? And I'm touching this palm tree, like, wow, that's neat. And this cop is there, and he looks at me, he goes, son, are you okay? And I said, yeah, this is the first palm tree I've ever seen in my life. And he goes, he just starts laughing. He goes, well, that's what they look like. But this whole time, I'm in this environment and everything's new to me. And that's what my soul needed. I was out of that stagnant winter I had been in. I'm down here helping out a friend. I'm hearing these stories of my dad's friends and all these other people. And I'm getting into these creative juices are flowing. And I started working on my first true book. And it got me where I'm at today. So yesterday I'm up seeing Ed and thinking about all these people and talking. And he's just saying, like your dad and John were the two best people I ever knew. He says they were straight shooters. They were good men. And I said, you're right. And it made me think about that story being in Florida. I wound up staying a whole week working on this book, writing it, until John got out and we left. And it was the only time I'd been in Florida with my dad. It was the very last time I was ever in Florida with my dad, Bill, and Dick, and John, And I think there was a nephew there too. I can't think of his name. He's a truck driver, but it was a fun time. It was a really fun time. And those experiences as a writer are the ones that taught me delivery. When you would hear Dick tell a story, his delivery, even when he was drinking, was perfect. And my dad's delivery on it back was perfect. It was a beautiful, beautiful time. So driving back, I always wanted to stop at this place south of the border. Okay, I think it's in North Carolina. And they're like, oh, they got all the stuff there. All the stuff that oh, you've got to see it. People always tell me, oh, you've got to stop there. If you're ever there, you've got to stop there. And I told them, I said, hey, I want to stop at south of the border. So they pull in the parking lot 3 in the morning. And I'm fuming. I'm like, really? 3 in the morning? Oh, we promised you we'd get you here. I just looked at them both and I said, I'm not talking to either one of you the rest of the way. I start laughing because I'm like, 3 in the morning, it's closed. You got me here, you know? It's not like the Grand Canyon or something else that I can say, oh, wow, I got to see the view. It's a store, it's closed. And I got home and it was back in the wintertime, taking my shorts off. And I'd been reborn as a writer. I was totally reborn. I took my pen and I started writing, and Vicky had said to me, wow, that stuff you're, that's really good. That's really good poetry you're writing. What happened? And I said, well, I had my come to Jesus moment as a writer where I had that great adventure with those men. And talking about it, you don't forget these things. So, you know, seeing Ed yesterday, talking about some of the people, really was nice. It was really nice and fun. And he's going through a lot with this pandemic, just as much as the rest of us are. And I want to think about him and think about all these other people. And if you can get out and see them, do it. Because in my experience, you can count your real friends on one hand. You're a lucky man. I didn't write that. I don't know who first said that, but they were a pretty smart fella. And I'll leave it at that.